attendees are in listen-only mode.
All right, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Be seated.
Let's like we record it yourself. Yeah.
All right. Again, good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's Board of Public Works. Before we begin, I'd like to recognize that we are just a few days away from the 4th of July. And this 4th of July is especially exciting because it marks the 250th year of America's independence. We're celebrating a remarkable milestone in our nation's history. Anniversaries invite us to look back, but they also challenge us to think about the future we're building together. And there is no better place to do that than right here in the great state of Maryland. The very building we're sitting in reminds us that Maryland has always been at the center of our nation's story. This is the only state capital to have ever served as our nation's capital. And it was in this building that the Treaty of Paris was ratified, marking the end of the Revolutionary War. As we prepare to celebrate Independence Day, I'd also like to recognize the work of the Maryland 250 Commission. In 2023, the governor charged the commission with creating the most inclusive commemoration of our nation's founding in state history. Since then, the commission has engaged with Marylanders across the state through educational events, local partnerships, service, and so much more. And today we're fortunate to be joined by the executive director, Michelle Johnson.
She's on her way out.
No, she's
here.
Oh, there you are. Hey, Michelle, good to see you. As well as our state archivist, Elaine Rice Bachman. There she is. Can we give him a round of applause? The two of them and the entire commission have done a remarkable job of reminding Marylands how important Maryland is in Americans' history for the 250 celebration. So thank you all for everything that you do. Michelle and Elaine, again, are members of the Maryland 250 Commission, and we deeply appreciate your dedication to inclusivity, celebrating our rich history. I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve the people of Maryland alongside each of you. I wish everyone a safe, joyful, and meaningful 4th of July. With that, let's get started with the business of the day. Good morning, Secretary Gonter.
Good morning, Governor, and good morning to you, Mr. Treasurer and Madam Comptroller. There are 37 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning and one report of procurement contract modification. There were some late revisions to items 26 and 27, if I could just detail those really quickly. On item 26, subgrants 5, 9, 11, and 20 were removed in the revision. Those are grants to Superfresh Supermarket, Doing Business Pratt Street Meat and Produce Inc., Sentinel Gardens, Centerville Farmers Market, and Fresh Start Food and Garden LLC, respectively. Item 27, subgrant 66 was removed. That's the Friends of Collington Square Park Inc. grant. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer, I'm happy to assist in answering any questions.
All right, thank you, Mr. Secretary. Now, I understand we have a speaker request this morning, and in the best interest of time, we'll ask that the speakers limit their comments to no more than 3 minutes. So I'd like to have Secretary Gontram to be the timekeeper. First, we have a speaker request for item number 7, which is a request to award $11.5 million grant to the Chesapeake Bay Trust. I'd like to recognize Jose Castellanos, who has signed up to speak in support of this item. Mr. Castellano, please. Good morning.
Here, am I good?
Yeah.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Miller, Comptroller Learman, and State Treasurer Davis for the opportunity to address the Board of Public Works today. The Chesapeake Bay Trust is a 501c3 created by the Maryland General Assembly in 1985. We are honored to be tapped to fulfill our mission of delivering resources to community-based organizations to increase stewardship of our local resources. We are deeply appreciative of the board's ongoing support and wanted to just quickly share a bit of information about the incredible programs that this funding supports. The Chesapeake Conservation and Climate Corps is entering its 17th year and serves now as the climate wing of service year for the Department of Service and Civic Innovation. It was recently expanded with additional funding coming through this board to focus more on climate as called for by the Climate Solutions Now Act of 2022. The program increases access to green careers by placing young adults aged 18 to 25 with a nonprofit or government agency for a year of service in the natural resources sector. And the Urban Trees Program was called for in the 2021 Tree Solutions Now Act as a component of the state's 5 million trees by 2031, and it is entering its fifth year. This program focuses on greening communities, improving human health and livability by mitigating the effects of climate change. We wanted to come before the board today to express our deep appreciation for the resources budgeted to support these incredibly important programs. Funding for urban trees isn't just environmental, it's a public health strategy. On hot days like today, shaded areas can be up to 20 degrees cooler than unshaded ones. How marvelous is that? Reducing heat-related illnesses and ultimately enhancing lives. The trust previously sent a list to the board of the 31 new projects in disadvantaged communities that are ready to start planting more than 20,000 trees upon receipt of funding. Additionally, now more than ever, young adults need stable pathways into the workforce. Green career service programs like the Chesapeake Conservation and Climate Corps, in partnership with BSCI, provide paid, hands-on experience and a critical launch path into employment. The trust is excited to pass through this funding budgeted to support disadvantaged communities in increasing urban trees canopy and to accelerate climate career opportunities for young adults in Maryland. We deeply appreciate you, the incredibly hard work of this board, and we thank you for your support.
Mr. Cassiano, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next, we have a speaker request for item number 16, which is a request to award $100,000 grant to the Olney Civic Fund for planning the Olney community events. I'd like to recognize Kevin Johnson, who has signed up to speak virtually in support of the item. Mr. Johnson, good morning. We can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Good morning. How's that?
There you go.
Yes, thank you for having
you.
Me. My name is Kevin Johnson, and I am the chairman of the Olney Civic Fund in Olney, Maryland. And on behalf of our board of directors, as well as the residents of this great community that we live in, I'm here to thank you for the generous grant opportunity that allows our organization to show why Olney, Maryland is a great place to live and work. Our various programs are designed to engage residents and highlight the tremendous efforts of our many nonprofits in this community. They are also designed to promote fun and camaraderie, as witnessed by the over 15,000 generous supporters that participate in Olney Days, Barrel Age Beer Fest, It's Olney Time, and various other events that we have throughout the year. Your possible support will assist us with continuing our mission to nurture relationships between both the local businesses and the residents that we serve, bringing people together and providing identity to our town. We look forward to continuing our program objectives and thank you for your consideration of the resources budgeted for this particular objective that we have and for allowing us to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Appreciate you. So, and lastly, I'd like to also recognize item number 19, which is a request to award $325,000 grant to the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad. The Western Maryland Scenic Railroad is a driver for economic activity in the region. They've been doing some great work, most recently in television space. We're joined this morning by Executive Director Wes Hines, who has a few words to share with us today. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning. Governor and Comptroller, Secretary Gottram, thank you for giving me just a couple of minutes. I won't take too much of your time. What I wanted to do today, this is actually my sixth season with the railroad, and we have tried to make sure that we highlight what the funding from the state the grant program does for the railroad and how it gives back to the state ultimately. And you just mentioned the television shoot. Out of the blue, sort of, we ended up with a television shoot for a major production called Mayor of Kingstown. And how that came back to help the state. We went from, I told you earlier, zero to hero. All of a sudden we had 500 people at Canal Place and at the railroad. What we thought was gonna be just the train going left to right and then they were gonna go away turned into three episodes worth of television. But what it really did, besides putting Western Maryland on the television, it brought people into our hotels and people into our restaurants and into our retail space. Some of you may be familiar that recently we've opened a new boutique hotel on Baltimore Street where we've done the redevelopment. That hotel opened on the day shooting started and they were sold out through Paramount for that entire week plus. In total, all the hotels in the area had over 2,000 rooms sold. So that's kind of what the railroad is able to do. You think of the railroad as being the Polar Express, which we always laugh about the Polar Express.
Love the Polar Express.
Pajamas are on sale now. But more importantly is how does the railroad take all these things and keep bringing people into the area and getting them not only just to come visit Western Maryland, but getting them to stay. And recently, I've spoken, I know Secretary Gontram with you before, most of our staff is pretty young crew, because we really had to rebuild the railroad about 5 years ago. We worked really hard to bring in people that wanted to be there, people that wanted to be in the community. And our staff, just recently, we had three people buy houses. And you don't think about those things. You say, oh, they bought a house, that's great. Well, that's a $150,000 plus deal per person, and their cars and their bills and all the things. Those things come back to impact Cumberland as a whole. So we're continuing to do great things. The BPW money helps us not only operationally, but with capital improvements, of course, to make our product even better. I hope you enjoy the token of ours for the television shoot.
Absolutely.
And again, every year, I just wanna make sure we're telling you what we're doing with the state's money so that we can be accountable to everybody and say thank you.
Mr. Hines, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I know what I'm going to be doing. After the July 4th fireworks, I'm going to be binge watching this show. Yes, to see where Cumberland shows up next.
It's in five, episode 1, 7, and 8.
Thank you so much for everything you do for Cumberland and for the great state of Maryland.
Thanks for making the drive out here, too.
No problem.
It is. So there's a few other items I'd also like to highlight. First, I'd like to highlight item number 26, which is a request from the Department of Housing and Community Development to award $2 million in grant funding for 19 projects across the state through the Nourish Maryland Grant Program. Our administration launched the Nourish Maryland Grant Program this past January to address longstanding disparities in food access for Maryland communities. Through the program, retail businesses and nonprofits in communities with food insecurity can receive grants to expand access to fresh and healthy food options. DHCD partners with the Governor's Innovation Team to identify high-need communities to prioritize grant funding areas. Additionally, Nourish Maryland partners with Department of Agriculture to provide Marylanders with dollar-for-dollar match for purchases using federal nutrition benefits at participating farmers markets. With today's $2 million investment, this round of Nourish Maryland funding will support a total of 44 businesses and nonprofits across our 18 counties. This work is so important because access to fresh and healthy food options for Maryland families should never depend on where they choose to live. And there's more to come. DHCD will announce the rest of the Nourish Maryland Award at the end of July. Very excited to hear that, Secretary Day. Thank you for that. I'd also like to highlight item number 27, which is another request from DHCD to award $54.7 million in grant funding to invest in housing, local businesses, and other community initiatives. This request will fund 170 individual projects across the state. Included in this is $1.3 million in funding for affordable housing and a community bridge in the Park Heights community. One of our enough initiative priority funding zones. I'd like to welcome Secretary Jake Day, who can share a little bit more about these investments. Good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. Good morning, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. Good to be with you this morning. I want to note just really quickly, well, first I'll say for the record, Jake Day, Secretary of Housing and Community Development. One of my favorite projects that State Revitalization Programs has funded is the Baltimore Street redevelopment in Cumberland, which is a great place to get a meal and now stay after you ride on the Polar Express. Madam Comptroller, I almost brought my daughters this morning. I'm really glad I didn't, because otherwise they'd be pulling me to Cumberland later today. So I want to thank the board for consideration of both items 26 and 27. Item 26, the Nourish Maryland Awards, as you mentioned, Madam Lieutenant Governor, will help to address food insecurity and food deserts. So important for our state. In addition to empowering healthy food retailers and financing affordable housing, our objective is to make great places for Marylanders. Created places of opportunity. And so that includes in item 27, $19.5 million from the Baltimore Regional Neighborhoods Initiative, $20 million from the National Capital Strategic Economic Development Fund, NED, $10 million from the SEED Community Development Anchor Institution Fund, and $5 million from the Maryland Facade Improvement Program. And these awards will spur innovation and investment, attracting talented workers into Maryland while building the affordable homes for places that keep them here. Because you know, we believe in a competitive economy, great places win. And we're going to use these critical state dollars to build places that are embraced, that are memorable, that are lovable, that are supported, and that produce the economic multiplier effect that we know every Maryland community deserves. So I respectfully request the board's approval on these items, and thank you so much for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. I want to thank you and your assistant, Assistant Secretary Brad Fallon, and the entire department for your work in administering these programs. I know it's not an easy task. On behalf of the people of Maryland, thank you for all that you do. Next, I'd like to highlight item A1, which is a request to add $1.3 million to an existing contract with the GEO Reentry Services for Substance Use Disorder Treatment Services in Maryland Correctional Facilities. This request will ensure that services continue to be available for incarcerated individuals in Western Maryland, Eastern Maryland, and Central Maryland. Our administration believes in the value that these services provide for public health and public safety. For those of you who may not know, Maryland was the very first state in the nation to require medication-assisted treatment services to be available in correctional facilities statewide. And the data is clear. Substance use services are proven to reduce both recidivism rates and post-release overdose mortality rates for our returning citizens. When individuals encounter the criminal legal system, we have a responsibility to help stabilize their lives and to prepare them for a healthy reentry. So I want to thank the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services for their work to ensure that these critical services continue to be available. Now, finally, I'd like to call up item number 35, which is a request from the Maryland Stadium Authority to approve the acquisition of Laurel Park to turn into a year-round horse training facility. I'd like to invite MSA Chairman Craig Thompson to share more about this incredibly important acquisition. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Madam Lieutenant Governor, and thank you for your wonderful remarks regarding our anniversary. And good morning, Madam Comptroller and Mr. Secretary, Mr. Treasurer, always a great pleasure to see you. To state for the record, my name is Craig Thompson, and I serve as the chair of the board at the Maryland Stadium Authority. And I am pleased to draw your attention to and introduce item number 35, which is a request to approve the purchase of Laurel Park to become the site of Maryland's statewide thoroughbred training center. Now, as you know, in 2024, the MSA was charged with the General Assembly with overseeing two projects that will transform the horse racing industry in Maryland. The reconstruction of Pimlico Racecourse into a world-class venue for racing fans, and the acquisition of a site for redevelopment into a premier horse training facility. Last year, the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority brought to this board a request to acquire Shamrock Farms in Carroll County, which MTROA had selected as the location to construct this training facility. However, once MSA obtained access to the site to perform standard due diligence at Shamrock Farm, it discovered significant challenges on site that were not previously known. MSA's review also concluded that the Shamrock Farm Training Center would cost at least $212 million to complete, over double what had been previously stated, and considerably straining available funding to rebuild Pimlico. As a result, MSA and Medco began exploring alternative options, including Laurel Park, which is widely supported by the Maryland Jockey Club, whose chairman, Jim Dresser, and board member Mike Hankin are joining us here today. It's also supported by representatives of, and I believe some are here, representatives of the Horsemen. With your approval, today's acquisition will ensure both the Pimlico Redevelopment and Training Center projects remain on track to be completed within MSA's budgeted authorized amount by the General Assembly. MSA estimates that the pivot to Laurel Park will save the state roughly $50 million. Together, these changes will ensure that MSA can deliver a reimagined Pimlico to serve as the permanent home of Maryland racing, with over 120 race days running each year in Park Heights. But acquiring Laurel Park is more than just a prudent financial decision. Today's action protects the legacy of one of Maryland's most iconic racing grounds, having hosted generations of fans, entertainers, and Triple Crown legends, not to mention the 151st running of the Preakness Stakes just 2 months ago. To that end, this item follows the state's historic decision to secure the IP rights to the Preakness Stakes, protecting not only the long-term vitality of the Triple Crown, but the state's investment into the infrastructure that backs the Preakness's global success. Together, these actions mark an unparalleled commitment from this administration to enhance Maryland's entire equine industry. In summary, this item has the strong support of leaders within the Maryland racing community, will maximize available project funds, and is the right move to ensure the future of Maryland's multi-billion dollar horse racing industry. In closing, I want to acknowledge and thank the hard work of so many colleagues, including MSA's Executive Vice President, Gary McGuigan, who is also here and available to answer any questions that you may have, and Medco's CEO, Tom Sadowski, both of whom are joining us here today as well. I thank you so much in advance for your consideration of this request. Thank you for your time. And I'd like to introduce Jim Dresser, the chair of the Maryland Jockey Club, for additional introductory remarks.
Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. Good morning, Madam Governor, Madam Comptroller, and Mr. Treasurer. My name is Jim Dresser. I'm the current chairman of the board of the Maryland Jockey Club, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that will oversee racing in Maryland. It was a board appointed by Governor Moore in 2025. I've been a longtime industry supporter and participant, and I'm also a long-term business owner in the state of Maryland. I just want to mention, some of the little known facts, there are 28,000 jobs in the state of Maryland associated with equine activities. We have more horses per square mile than any other state in the country. We're a $2.9 billion industry. So this Maryland's thoroughbred and equine industry is important to our state. The purchase of Laurel is critically important as a training center. We need Laurel as a training center to make sure that we have year-round racing here in the state. It's a critical piece to allowing Maryland's thoroughbred industry and racing industry to thrive. It also, Craig Thompson said, it's a perfect complement to Pimlico, and it will be important to Pimlico's success as well. Laurel will be one of the backbones of Maryland's racing industry. It's been a home of Maryland racing for many decades, and it will be a great use as a training facility. This also, in addition to the purchase of the Preakness IP, puts Marylanders in full control of our future. And so now we have all the pieces of the puzzle for our industry to succeed. Critically important, and the right structure is now in place. So on behalf of the Maryland Jockey Club and the entire Maryland equine industry, thank you for considering and supporting the purchase of Laurel Park. This move helps preserve an industry and puts the Maryland Jockey Club in a great place for long-term success. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Drescher, for your strong leadership and collaborative partnership from the Jockey Club as we collectively shape a bright future for Maryland's horse racing and equine industries. And thank you, Chairman Thompson, for your extraordinary leadership at the Maryland Stadium Authority. Always good to see the both of you. Thank you for being here. So today's acquisition underscores our state's commitment to preserve its horse racing industry, one that employs almost 30,000 Marylanders and generates over $3 billion in activity. For decades, Laurel Park has been a central part of Maryland's racing history, hosting world-famous steeds like Secretariat and War Admiral. Now it will become a place that trains the next generation of Triple Crown champions. At the same time, the state's recent decision to acquire the Preakness Stakes intellectual property rights earlier this month will ensure that control of the iconic assets that define the second jewel of the Triple Crown remain right here where it belongs, in the hands of Maryland's very own racing community. Together, the state's investment into the Pimlico race course, ownership of the Preakness IP, and today's acquisition of Laurel Park will ensure that horse racing in Maryland will continue to drive jobs, spending, and wages year-round in Park Heights and surrounding neighborhoods in Baltimore City. Are there any questions on this item, Madam Comptroller?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Governor. Great to be here. Thank you so much, Chair Thompson, for joining us today. Chair Drescher, Mike, Gary, thanks to the whole team. Really appreciated your update and all of your work on this. I know there's been a lot going on. It's been a busy time in the horse industry. So first, I want to echo the Madam Governor's decision or comments on the decision to acquire the Preakness IP and just salute that decision. Certainly, it's essential. I think that decisions about this industry's future and about this race, the future of the race, are now going to be made by the state, which is just essential. And it's also the fiscally prudent decision. When you look at the numbers, it is a much better deal over the long term for the state of Maryland. We will not be using taxpayer dollars to acquire these IP rights, but rather existing racing revenues. So I think it was the right decision. Now on this item specifically too, I am supportive. I think this is the right decision as well to move forward. Given the industry is, of course, as many people have articulated, a major employer, a major revenue generator, which I appreciate, and Laurel Park has been part of Maryland's racing history for over a century. I went to the Black Eyed Susan this year and still looking good. Of course, there's work to be done, but it makes much more sense to start from what we have existing at Laurel than to build from the ground up. And it is a much more cost-effective path than where we started with Shamrock Farms. So I do, I just wanted to chat a little bit about Shamrock Farms since you're here, now that Laurel Park will shortly be on the path forward. We are still sitting with the fact that the state spent roughly $4.5 million on Shamrock Farms. And without a plan forward, that money right now is a sunk cost. So I wondered if, Gary, you could tell us a little bit, the state still owns Shamrock Farm, correct?
That is correct, ma'am. And good morning, Governor, Treasurer, Madam Controller. Yes, the state owns Shamrock Farms.
So it's up to us right now what to do with that land.
It is, and the state authority has partnered with DGS. We are currently going through the disposition process, and it will go through clearinghouse. It's with the Department of Planning, and the intent after that process, if there's no state interest, is to go through a public auction.
Understood. So there is an option that would generate some sort of return on the $4.5 million that we spent.
That is correct. It depends on the market conditions at the time of the public auction, but the intent is to recoup as much, if not all, of the $4.5 million.
So We could either, there's a number of ways that we could do that, and potentially it could even be open for public use if the county were to say they wanted to buy it. Okay. And can you confirm that the act of transferring that land to anyone else would come back to the Board of Public Works? Is that correct?
That is correct. It will come back two times. It'll come back for the property surplus.
Many times.
And also for the sale.
Okay, got it. That's helpful. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your answers. And thank you to everybody for all of your diligence and work on this process. I know it's been a long process, and it's great to be moving forward. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a second.
I think there's more questions.
More questions, sorry. Just not from me. Now you get the treasure.
Do we have an appraisal for Shamrock?
There were two appraisals done in the spring of 25 under the MTROA. For memory, they were in the high threes.
We paid how much for it?
$4.5 million.
We paid more than about, sounds like almost 50% more.
I think they were like 3.9, 3.8 million. And we were not involved, but DGS has a process of looking at the independent appraisals, and I believe that DGS confirmed 4.5 was a good number.
And do we have any current appraisals for the land?
Not yet, but we will go out and get two new appraisals as part of this process.
Any chance that we have to sell it at a loss?
There's always a chance that could happen, sir.
A chance?
The only thing I know today from talking to professionals, and the same authority doesn't buy and sell land every day, and that's why we partner with DGS, is the market seems to have softened a little bit in about a year's time. So we'll see what the appetite is.
Is there, I guess, a window, or what's the sort of focus of when we're looking to sell it?
We expect,
and the reason for the question is I'm wondering, is it better to hang on to it for a while than to dispose of it at a loss?
Well, when we go through the auction process, we can set a minimum amount so we don't have to sell it if it's coming in way below what we paid for it. In terms of timeline, expect the clearinghouse to take another 45 days or so. So the public auction will be this fall going into the winter.
I'm going to support this because I guess unlike the governor and the comptroller, I'm not speaking for myself. I'm speaking for the General Assembly, and through the Legislative Policy Committee, they've expressed a willingness to move forward with this. But my concern is that we're making a big bet on horse racing, and frankly, I just don't see it. We can talk about the revenue, but what about the cost? We put literally hundreds of millions of dollars into this, and we have to look at the opportunity cost. And I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I don't want that to get missed, the opportunity cost. What else can we could have been doing and can be doing with that same revenue? It's funny, I sort of listened to sort of the history or when we're talking about horse racing, and I forgot the other horse that quickly, but we mentioned Secretariat and the other horse. But that sort of takes me back to, that was like 50 years ago. We're not talking about any horses in the last century or in the last 10 years, 20 years. Well, the point I'm making is that, are we getting caught up in nostalgia? Or is this, is this something viable going forward when we look at our other sports industries in the state? Let's take the Ravens / Colts. They talk about Ray Lewis and Lamar Jackson. They're not talking John Unitas. You see what I'm saying? It's modern, it's still moving forward and not sort of living in the past. And so, and it's probably more of a statement than a question, and it's certainly one I'm not going to put you on the spot to answer, but I think at some point you have to confront whatever it may be, and I'm not saying we're there now, but we got to take a hard look at this and go, can this work on its own? Or is this something that we permanently have to prop up? I mean, the numbers are just sort of staggering to me, you know, 4.5% Shamrock, you know, Laurel Park. You know, we can just keep pulling numbers out, and this is not monopoly money. These are real dollars that can help real citizens and do real things for the state of Maryland that will help it move forward, as opposed to trying to keep, you know, a dream, an industry afloat. You know, if we were doing this for some other things or other industries or whatever, you know, we would get a very different response. It would be called something very different. But in this particular case, we're calling it economic development. I promise you, if we were in other communities or other industries, it would have a very pejorative term attached to it as the reason for keeping it afloat. So again, I'm not asking you to comment on that. This is just my rant, but that day has got to come sooner rather than later about whether or not we can continue doing this, because we're just digging deep. We're doubling down on this industry and with no real guarantees, and I get there are no guarantees in life, but not even a reasonable expectation for return on our investment. We hear a lot, and you hear that in other industries, whenever they want to build a stadium somewhere, we get this economic impact that I've yet to see an economic impact of 30 years ago. Nah, this is a bad idea. We're not getting any. Everything always paints that rosy picture, including over at FedEx Field. And then 30 years later, we have nothing to show for it. So I'll end just by saying, when we have all of these rosy pictures painted for us, you know, in the entertainment industry, in the sports industry, we got to look at the opportunity cost for real investments and things that can make a real return, will have a real impact in our citizens' lives, and not just sort of, you know, keep propping up something that at some point we got to decide whether it's worth propping up.
So.
Sorry, Chief Trotter for the record, Secretary of Department of General Services. Just point of clarification, minor point of clarification for the record, that it's actually, as we go through the clearinghouse process, it will not go to auction. It probably will go through either request for bid or RFP process. And we're going to, you know, go through the standardized process for property disposition. So to make sure that this auction sometimes are hit or miss depending on the day. So we'll go through a proper marketing of the property, an RFP or request for bids.
Do you mind if I could follow up, Mr. Treasurer?
Yes, ma'am.
Could I talk to Chairman Drescher? Could I ask you a couple of questions? Would you mind? Thanks. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. I don't know if you come before? Welcome. Isn't it great? Yeah, we're so nice. So I think, I think that the treasurer and others, you know, who have concerns, obviously these are, you know, legitimate concerns and should be addressed, because I do think we want to make sure that we are being very cognizant of opportunity costs. And I think one of the things that I have learned a lot through this process is how other states operate. And so, you know, I appreciated that Churchill Downs was interested in buying the Preakness IP. I thought that signaled, was a great signal for what it's worth, right? And that there is value in it. And I appreciate, you know, that Churchill Downs is a publicly traded company. Isn't that right? And
yes.
And they turn a profit, right, for their shareholders.
Well, they have many other businesses besides Reggie.
Precisely.
They have casinos.
I think that's one of the things that I learned a lot through this process too, and just understanding it more, was that it is possible to move in that direction to make sure that this industry can stand on its own four legs, right? And it does not need infusions of state dollars, because like Churchill Downs has done with the Kentucky Derby, and other, you know, places around the country, this can be a profitable industry, and is in many ways, but these capital needs have been what has been holding it back. Would you agree with that? Like, I'd be curious on your thought.
I would agree, but I would also say that we have an opportunity here that hasn't been around for a while. As an example, our TV rights are available. A lot of sporting events, television rights, don't come available that often. But right now, as an example, Kentucky Derby, the Churchill Downs is hooked up with NBC, the Belmont Stakes with Fox Sports. Ours is an open book, so we are in the process of getting new bids for TV rights. We've recruited, we have on as a consultant, KO Productions, Kevin O'Grady. Kevin is probably the best events person in the country. He has actually staged Kentucky Derbies two or three occasions. He has staged Super Bowl halftimes. So we have the Oakview Group that has done a wonderful job with the CFG Arena and has built sponsorship from, I think, $1 million a year to $12 million. They're now on our team. So I think that's it. But I think that we do have a tremendous management team in place. I'm very optimistic about our future. It's a tough game. It is, there's no doubt, but it is, I think, to say it's a new day sounds pretty redundant, but I think we're in a very good place on our industry to make this a profitable, fun thing. I also think for the city of Baltimore, you know, 50 years ago, I'd say Baltimore was known for three major sports, the Colts, the Orioles, and Preakness. I think we've lost our luster a little bit with that, as the industry is part of that. I think to make with the reconstruction of Pimlico, which I think is going to be a fantastic fan experience, I think Maryland will be known as the Ravens, the Orioles, and the Preakness again. I think that's coming. So, bullish. It's a tough road, but I think we're in a very good place to have a lot of success and make a really important story for the city and the state, but also a revenue generator and a profitable business. I do believe that.
Thank you.
Chairman Drescher, I think the treasurer has some questions.
A couple of things. You say that this is a very tough road. Why?
Well, gaming is, 50 years ago, there was only one place that you could bet, and that was at the racetrack, or Las Vegas. So there's a lot of competition for the gaming dollar. And so
backbone of really horse racing gaming.
It's what we run for. Purse money comes from gaming. So the owners we run for purse money, and everybody's employed based on how much purse money you can earn. So yes, it is. Gaming is part of what we have. Yes.
So if you're saying that gaming is now ubiquitous, what's fueling your optimism that horse racing can make it if gambling is sort of the financial background and you can get gambling anywhere now?
I think unique to this, it's a sport too. It's entertainment, it's a sport, it's cultural, and gaming is a part of it. It's not the only part of it, but I think in its alignment with this experience, I think it's a, I think that all very works well together in our case.
No, one thing that
I think if you go to other racetracks, you'll see tremendous fan support and gaming. So,
what about the TV rights? You mentioned that Belmont and Kentucky Derby have TV rights and we don't. Why?
I'm sorry, our contract with NBC just expired. So we have a fresh day to renew another multi-year contract. Our contract was up. So now it's time for a new contract, that's all.
Last thing, as it relates to Churchill Downs. One, I think it's probably not fair to put the Preakness and the Belmont in the same sort of tier with the Kentucky Derby. That's a whole different animal, even though they do the same thing.
Same animal, different.
Same, no one. It's at a different level. It's like comparing the championship football, the Super Bowl, with other championships. It's not the phenomenon that the Super Bowl is. So what I'm saying as it relates to Churchill Downs, it's probably unfair for us to use that as the standard, because that's the gold standard, and that's also a tough one to meet. But as it relates to Churchill Downs, wasn't there also some concern that they about the viability in Maryland, and that they could potentially, if they had gained control of it, that they could move it to, I think they have a location in Virginia and yes. other places in the area. So although Churchill Downs had made a go of it, weren't we concerned enough that they could move it out of Maryland, and if they had acquired it, they wouldn't have kept it in Maryland, but rather they could have moved it to one of their other properties?
I think that's a potential. What they were buying was the intellectual property, and the Maryland Jockey Club was leasing the IP from them for their use. But we also, they let it be known that if they were invited in, that they would love to run all of racing, including the Preakness. It's very speculative to say that. I wouldn't say it was off the table, but to...
Did it fuel why we ended up buying it?
Well...
Have to ask the governor, maybe.
Yeah, that's...
So y'all ain't had nothing to do with that. There were no conversations. The governor made that decision in the back.
Well, no.
Well, again, there's a lot of things going on here. The most important 2 days in racing are the Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Day, clearly. But, or as I referred to the economic matters and the jobs, we need 120 days of racing here. So Maryland could, and in the Mid-Atlantic area, I think we can get there with 120 days of racing. I think that's why we're a nonprofit, is because racing and people are our most important priorities. And so we want to sustain certainly the Preakness to be very important and be very successful. But we also want racing and breeding to be successful, to preserve open space and many other things. So it's a big picture. Could that have happened? I guess it could have happened under certain circumstances, yes. I also want to say that the Kentucky, you're right, the Kentucky Derby is its own being. But how many states or cities would like to have a recurring major national event come to their city every year? We have the Preakness. You know, Super Bowl moves around. Other sporting events move around. The Preakness comes back to Baltimore every year. I think we can build it into a fantastic cultural festival and a moneymaker for the city, Park Heights, in the state of Maryland. I wouldn't do this job if I didn't believe that, and I'll volunteer.
Are you talking the Preakness? Because I don't think there's any debate about the success of the Preakness and all that it has to offer. It's the other 120 days that you mentioned of racing that's at issue here, whether or not it is viable. The Preakness, I think,
yes,
sort of settled. It's a cultural phenomenon, an economic phenomenon, you know, all of that. It's the rest of the industry that we're discussing. I mean, if we're being frank about
it. Yes, sir, I believe it is. And I believe it is. Based on, I think there's a consolidation in the nationally in racing, and I think Maryland is beautifully placed to be a beneficiary of that.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes.
Madam Governor, may I be recognized?
Yes,
absolutely.
For just a moment, once again, for the record, Craig Thompson. And thank you, Mr. Treasurer, for your great questions. Madam Comptroller, I, like you, did not know much about the horse racing industry before this process started, and as a kid from East Baltimore, I really wasn't on my radar. But I did want to add a finer point to what Jim mentioned about the economic impact and the importance of the 120 race days and the industry in total. One of the benefits of every dollar spent on the training facility, on the IP, on Preakness itself, and the consistent races associated with it, is the employment of 28,000 Marylanders. And the homes that are sustained, the legacies, the lives that are maintained, and families that are built as a result of this industry. So I did just want to add that finer point on the larger economic development impact. There are 28,000, close to 30,000 Marylanders who benefit daily from every dollar that's spent in this industry or invested in this industry. So I just didn't want that point to be lost.
Thank you, Chairman Thompson.
I think it's, can I just wait one final
yeah,
comment?
Sure.
I think it is so fortuitous for us that we are renegotiating our TV deal now, given where the country is with AI and where the world is. You know, we just saw an Olympics that I think was the most viewed Winter Olympics in decades. We have all eyes, you know, on the World Cup. And so more and more, I think we're going to see that what sells and what people will actually tune in to watch is sports, right? And that should make our race that much more valuable over the next few years. And I think if we had negotiated this even last year, we might not have realized how important sporting events and how worthwhile sporting events and how the cost, you know, the value of sporting events to advertisers on TV would be. So I'm confident that you will get this right, but let's make sure we get it right and, you know, make all we can. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer, you know, Chairman Thompson and Chairman Drescher, thank you for that spirited discussion. And if there are no other items remaining, is there anything else on the Secretary's agenda that anyone has questions on?
Okay.
So may I have a motion to approve the Secretary's agenda?
Motion to approve the Secretary's agenda.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Now let's proceed to the Department of Natural Resources agenda. Good morning, Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Madam Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, Josh Kurtz, Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. The department has 9 items for your consideration today, and I'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Right. Is there any discussions on the DNR agenda?
Nope.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve the DNR agenda?
Motion to approve the DNR agenda.
Is there a second? Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. Now let's proceed to the University System of Maryland. Good morning, Mr. Hickey.
Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller, Tom Hickey representing University System of Maryland. There are 15 items for your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I believe, Madam Comptroller, you have some questions.
You're so surprised. I like your bow tie.
Yeah, it's the only one I own.
Thank you for being here. Item one, GM, sub-item two, we are back, College Park, SecU Stadium, and again, here, this is another example, I believe, of using GO bond proceeds to fund athletic facility upgrades. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. And you brought a similar item just last month, did you not?
That's correct.
And you may recall at that meeting that I pointed out that it was actually the first time in over 10 years that USM had used GO bond proceeds to fund athletic facility upgrades. Because historically, athletic facility upgrades are funded through auxiliary revenue bonds, private donations, Big Ten revenue, right? I still mourn the ACC. We are, you know, Big Ten revenue or the university's own resources. Not by Maryland taxpayers, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and so now here we are again. So probably not a surprise to you or anyone that I am concerned about funding our athletic facilities with GO bonds. The University of Maryland generates $124 million a year in athletic revenue on its own. So, you know, why isn't the University of Maryland asking, using its athletic revenue dollars to fund upgrades to SecU Stadium?
The only thing I can tell you is the General Assembly appropriated these funds. This was not a request from that I'm aware of.
Yep.
And you are probably more familiar with the budgeting process in the Maryland General Assembly.
Yep.
I don't know how these funds were appropriated, and I think the legislature would probably better equipped to answer that question.
Well, I'm certainly happy to, you know, ask additionally from them. You know, I know $40,000 doesn't seem like much against $124 million athletics budget, which is why I don't understand why we can't just fund athletics stadium upgrades out of athletic revenue dollars. You know, $40,000 is a lot to, you know, schools who, you know, maybe want to fix something on their, you know, public schools or to, you know, other organizations. So that's where I would be hopeful that this money would go in the future. So I don't don't think I have any other questions, but I am going to vote against this again. Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Hickey, the money for the improvements in the stadium, where do they go toward? Is it toward ADA improvements?
It is for ADA. It's a television ADA project, so that folks who are hearing impaired, I believe, understand what's going on. Yeah. And there is a program the state has that funds ADA improvements. That's a separate pot of capital money. And I do believe that they have been used in the past for facilities, like for student centers, for bathroom modifications and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, like I pointed out last time, like part of the lawsuit that brought, we brought a lawsuit against Seniors to Maryland College Park years ago to require ADA, and I certainly support that, but I don't think it should be a separate request. I think that the University of Maryland should value our, fans with disabilities as much as it values everybody else, and so pay for them to be able to enjoy the game out of the same revenues that they pay for any other stadium upgrades.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Thanks.
Madam Comptroller, do you have any other thing that you would like to highlight? Is it item number 15?
Okay. Thank you. Also, just want to take a moment. This is Coppin State, so I'm going to steal a second to just say thank you to Coppin State. We hosted our third annual Bridging Communities Conference yesterday in partnership with the organization Maryland Nonprofits and Coppin State University Nonprofit Leadership Program at Coppin State. And we had nearly 300 nonprofit business leaders from across Maryland alongside officials from state agencies. So thank you to all the state agencies who sent folks. In Maryland, we have 43,000 nonprofit businesses that employ 280,000 people. Another industry that does so much for our state and helps us to generate the revenue while also serving the people and the communities of Maryland. So really appreciate the time from this board to publicly thank President Jenkins and the Coppin community for their partnership in their work and their hospitality yesterday. Thank you, Madam Governor.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Hickey. If there's no further discussion, Secretary Gunn.
Let's stay in the Coppin State contract. I think it's 15S. I actually want to congratulate Coppin for that particular contract. They looked at it. They looked at the MB Eagle, determined that they were significantly low. So rather than take the easy way out and just pick up the option, they sent it out for it to be rebid. And yep. With that higher goal, I think it did 20%.
Yep.
Previously, it was at like 14, and I think the vendor was doing about 8. So they redid it with a higher goal, a better understanding, and in addition to the benefits that the students are going to receive and scholarships and so forth. So it sounds like a pretty good contract, and they did their due diligence on it. So I want to congratulate Cop and. Taking real good care with this contract.
Yeah, well said.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer, and thank you, Madam Comptroller and Mr. Hickey. If there's no further discussion, Secretary Gontram, can we pull item number 1 for a separate vote?
Item 1, sub item 2,
yes.
Madam Governor?
Yeah. So let's first take up item number 1. May I have a motion to approve this sub items?
So moved.
I will second. The sub-items passed 2-1, with the comptroller voting in the negative. On the remainder of the USM agenda, may I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion to approve the remainder of the USM agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Let's proceed to the MDOT agenda. Good morning, Ms. Radomski.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, my name is Valerie Radomski, Chief Procurement Officer for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today, we are presenting 18 agenda items for your consideration, including 1 report of an expedited procurement, and we are withdrawing item 18 RP. We have representatives available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Radomski. Is there any discussion on the MDOT agenda?
No discussion.
Okay, may I have a motion to approve the MDOT agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we get to conclude with the GS agenda. Good morning, Secretary Chowdhury.
Good morning, Madam Governor, Madam Comptroller, Ms. Treasurer. For the record, Chief Chowdhury, Secretary of Maryland Department of General Services. Today, the department is presenting 49 items in our agenda, including one hand carry for IT systems modernization, technical support services from the comptroller's office, and we are withdrawing four items today. Those four items are 1CGL, 35AE, 40IT, and 41IT. Our agenda does feature 34 capital grants and loans totaling more than $58 million. I just want to very, very briefly highlight one, which is item 14CGL, which provides $1.5 million for the Baltimore Museum of Art, which serves residents of all ages and provides a K-12 educational programming alongside internships and work-study opportunities for college students. This will provide needed upgrades for HVAC, fire suppression, LED lighting, hardwood flooring, and other options there to this facility. Let's continue to keep an eye on minority business participation. We do have one contract action to a certified minority business totaling more than $1.4 million. And we have four contract actions to certified small businesses totaling more than $5 million. We have agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Secretary Chaudhry. I believe we have a speaker for item number 15, which is a request to award $2 million capital grant to the Maryland Institute College of Art for renovations to their main building. I'd like to recognize Matt Hugel, who has signed up to speak in support of this item. Is Mr. Hugel here? Nope. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary. If there's no further discussions on the DES agenda.
Okay. Not really a discussion, Secretary Chaudhry. I think it may have come through you. My office received a letter regarding the thing that we talked about in Prince George's County with Department of Human Services. It sounded like everything is now worked out and that we're moving forward. Is that your understanding as well?
That's correct, Mr. Treasurer. Yes, I think everything's worked out. I think we're moving forward. We're negotiating in the midst of negotiating the lease right now, finalizing it. Hope to come back to the board very soon for approval.
This is the last step in all of that. When it comes before BPW, then everything's a go. Is that essentially it?
Yeah, yes, Ms. Treasurer. We'll come back. We're hoping to come back for the July 22nd BPW meeting for a commencement date of September the 1st. That'll be the last step, and then we'll just move forward with commencement.
Thank you, sir.
That's great.
Thank you.
Madam Comptroller, do you have any comments on item number 37?
Yes, I do. I just want to have a couple questions and comments on 37. First, I just want to say congratulations, Mr. Secretary. This is great. And can you confirm, I should say what this is for everybody. This is creating a Maryland State Facilities Master Plan. And I think, and please, Mr. Secretary Chaudhry, correct me if I'm wrong, is this the first time Maryland has undertaken a truly comprehensive statewide assessment of what we own, what we lease, and what we're actually spending?
That's correct. It is the first time ever to do a holistic review of everything owned and leased over our entire portfolio and come up with a master plan going forward.
Okay. That is amazing that this is the first time the state has ever done this, like mind-boggling, but I'm really glad we're doing it. And I think all agency heads here probably get this, but where we locate our state services and state employees really matters. Like, our teams care a lot. It matters for recruitment. It matters for service. You know, we want to constantly be asking, you know, are we located where Marylanders actually need us, right? We recently, we are in the midst working with you all to relocate many of our offices so that they can be more accommodating to Marylanders, so they can access us more easily. We want our workers and our team members to be in safe buildings and accessible buildings and transit accessible. And so, you know, Maryland's real estate portfolio makes the state one of the largest investors in Maryland, and businesses know that when the state commits to a location and invests in a facility, that is a direct investment in the community. So these strategic choices really matter. Final question, do you know the expected timeline for this project?
Great question, Madam Comptroller. Right now we're anticipating approximately about a year.
A year. Well, I look forward to seeing the work, and if we can be helpful, certainly let me know, and appreciate DGS taking this on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Chaudhry, and I second the comptroller. Congratulations on this Herculean effort. And I understand, is the state of Maryland the largest landowner in the state of Maryland?
I believe we are. With all land that we own, we have quite a bit of square footage here as well. Mm-hmm. We're right now on the state-owned, we're topping over 24 million, and we've got over 6 million square feet in just the lease space that we lease from private landowners.
Thank you. Thank you. So if there's no further discussion, may I have a motion to approve the DGS agenda?
Can I just confirm, we withdrew 4D, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, just making sure. Thanks, sorry. So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, thank you.
You mean you didn't hear me?
Sorry, I'm getting deaf here. That concludes today's meeting of the Board of Public Works. The next meeting will be July 22nd. Thank you all, and I hope you have a safe and wonderful, happy July 4th. And, you know, just thank you, everyone. And we are now adjourned.
Off the record at 11:13.